Welcome to Stamp Show here today. This is recorded in front of a live audience at Orco Expo 2015. I hope you enjoy the show. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Stamp Show here today, podcast number 15. We are recording this episode in Anaheim, California at Orco Expo 2015. We are going to go down the line and introduce ourselves.
Hello, I am Scott.
I'm Kaj.
I'm Brian.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week, we will be talking about Stamp News, Orco Expo 2015, Stamp Collecting History, Updates, Stamp Stories 2015, and our expert topic of the week is airmails. So in Stamp News, this week we are not just reporting the Stamp News, we are the Stamp News, bringing it to you live at Orco Expo 2015.
In front of a live studio audience.
Orco Expo is celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. Orco Expo is brought to you by our good friend, logo inspiration, and frequent guest, Steve Patillo, otherwise known as Stamp Show Steve of Quality Stamp Shows. Steve acquired Orco Expo 8 years ago, and it has been well attended since, becoming one of the best and largest annual shows in the Western United States. Set in the Grand Ballroom at the luxurious Embassy Suites in sunny Anaheim, Orco Expo covers over 2,500 square feet of floor space, packed wall to wall with over 40 dealers from all over the country. You will not find a better selection of stamp supplies, stamps, knowledge this side of the Rocky Mountains. Quality Stamp Shows has taken excellent care of us at this event and made this live recording an amazing experience for all of us. So, you guys, what are you looking forward to this year at Orco Expo?
I'm going for a new... Well, first of all, I'm looking for chicken stamps. Always did that. Hit everybody. Zero chicken stamps in this stamp show, it seems like.
Are you surprised?
No, but it's unfortunate, let's say. So, otherwise, I'm looking for early Victorian India myself.
Well, that's what you get for looking for a 3-cent commemorative.
It's also a chicken stamp, though.
How did things go with your chicken stamp study group?
Oh, somebody has hashtag chicken stamp study group that I have to get a Google password in order to enroll in my own study group.
But I thought you were going to get the study group through APS or something.
Yes, like that. That is my next goal, is to get enough people so that we can sign a petition and get a chapter affiliate of Chicken Stamp Research Group. So everybody out there who enjoys chicken stamps, please feel free to contact us via email.
Cash is looking for members.
Not us. Please contact Cash.
Yes. That's more of a personal thing.
I've met a lot of new people, and as usual, stamp shows, it's like a social club almost. You just start adding lists of contacts here and there, and you know, this guy knows a guy that knows a guy, and that guy can get you that stamp. It's kind of a good day.
Well, I think that's the whole benefit of stamp shows.
Which is?
Networking.
Networking.
You tell one dealer that, hey, I need a chicken stamp, and the next time he sees you, he's got a chicken stamp. And maybe if he doesn't have a chicken stamp, maybe he'll go to another dealer and say, hey, I got a customer for a chicken stamp. You got one? And that guy will go, no. But the next time, he might have one.
Yep.
So it kind of works.
And it's not just looking for the chicken stamp. I mean, there's only one stamp. It's looking for different usages. Like I said, I want to find a Foster Farms cover with the chicken stamp on it or something like that.
So I think you're going to be looking in the dollar booths at the APS show in Riverside next month.
That I will be.
Okay, so another question. If you guys had $1 million, what would you buy at the upcoming Regency auction this weekend?
$1 million?
Yes, exactly $1 million, all a dollar more.
Well, $1 million, you could probably buy 3/4 of the auction, but
easily.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff in there that I'm not particularly interested in.
I saw a nice used CSA.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it was on. I think it was an ad or some kind of cover-looking object, but it wasn't just a stamp.
A cover-looking object?
Well, I saw a 553 that was graded 100. It was pretty impressive-looking.
There is a mint, never-hinged, original gum 122 that I would love to get my hands on if I had that kind of money. That'd be a lot of fun. I talk about 122s a lot, if you haven't figured out that's a theme.
I thought you liked the 121, not the 122.
No, I like the 122.
Well, at our booth, we have the finest known fake number 121 under the glass.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'll have to take a picture of that and post that. That's actually kind of funny. People were coming by and commenting on it.
Wow, it's a beautiful stamp.
Yep. Wait, it's a what?
It's a beautiful proof and shaped like a stamp.
Yeah, it's a shaved proof, perforated fake grill, and then gum applied over the whole thing so it looks real. Somebody put a lot of work into it.
A lot of work for nothing.
Yeah.
Someone bought it.
Yeah, somebody bought it, exactly.
Yeah.
And bought it as such. No, there was a guy that came to our table just today, a really nice Asian guy, to submit some stamps. Cash was looking through the stack earlier, and I got to look through a bunch of his stuff. And he actually turned in a couple of original gum, hopefully, fingers crossed, 122s.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be really nifty. I hope those turn out. And I asked him, you know, where'd these come from? He inherited them. He got into stamp collecting himself. And he brings out this 4-inch thick album with all this neat stuff in it. Yeah, I have 20 more of those at home. Oh, okay.
Oh, his stuff was amazing because it was totally disorganized.
Mm-hmm.
Shoved into like a priority envelope. And that he had the 1869 special printings, like, just on a card shoved in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds like my office.
Yeah, that's true, too. But no, he kept handing me.
Thanks for noticing.
What about this? I hand me another stack of pages going, no. Holy crap. Mm. No.
Yeah, he had probably 100 one-centers and 100 two-centers. He wanted to know if any of them could grade. And unfortunately, it looked like most of them came from a single sheet, which was terribly centered. So nothing was gradable there, but he had some really interesting stuff. And then he also had a fake number one and number two that I had never seen before. I had no clue where these came from.
They weren't photocopied?
No, they were. They look sort of lithographed. They definitely were not engraved, but they were interesting looking. Obviously, he didn't submit those for certification.
Okay, we're going to move into stamp collecting history. Linz reports that the world's oldest post office sold to a private collector. The world's oldest post office, located in San Quahar, Scotland, will have a new owner in 2015. He is Manzoor Alam, a keen philatelist and postal historian, according to a December 8 press release from the post office. He is only the 16th postmaster of this post office, which opened more than 300 years ago in 1712. Penny Murphy, the 15th postmaster, had put the office up for sale in 2014, sometime in March. Suzanne Richardson, the post office's regional network manager for Scotland and North England, said, "We were looking for someone very special to replace Penny Murphy and take on the post office in San Quahar. The branch combines a rich postal history with today's wide range of postal office services. And we are delighted to announce that Dr. Alam has purchased the post office and been appointed as a new postmaster. In addition to operating the post office, Alam said he plans to create a small postal museum in San Quahar to promote the rich heritage of the past, as well as to establish a philatelic society in this town in southern Scotland. The San Quahar post office is recognized by the Universal Postal Union, the international governing body for postal administrations, and the Guinness Book of World Records as the oldest post office in the world. Letters posted there receive the hand stamp, "The World's Oldest Post Office." Its closest rivals for the title of oldest post office are located in Stockholm, Sweden, and Santiago, Chile. These two offices date back to 1720 and 1772, respectively. The building that houses the San Quahar Post Office began as a staging post for mail carriages owned by Abraham Crichton. What do you guys think about private ownership of a post office?
Is that very common here in the U.S.?
Well, I think you really can't be a stamp collector unless you own a post office.
Well, then most of us are pretty well behind.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that kind of the pinnacle of stamp collecting?
I suppose.
You could have a rarest stamp in the world, but how many stamp collectors own post offices?
Make it open your own branch of the Smithsonian.
Oh, okay.
Or you could sponsor somebody.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be owning a post office.
That's true. I don't think it's...
I don't know that the U.S. does contract post offices any longer.
I don't think it's legal.
They did at one point in the 19th century, but I don't think they do anymore.
There's places that sell stamps, but...
Yeah, but that's not a post office. To be a post office, wouldn't you have to at least say you have to be able to cancel something?
You have to accept...
Be able to accept mail?
Accept mail, yeah.
Top, hold on. We have a guest walked in, a very important guest.
Hello.
Hello, Steve. We've had Steve as a guest before.
Oh, yeah, but now he's not a guest. He is the promoter of the stamp show that we're at.
And I welcome all you to Orco Expo.
Yay.
Glad to be here.
So how has it been so far? Other than I noticed there was a little...
Police excitement?
Police excitement out front.
Yeah, what was that all about?
We had some guests escorted away from the premises for past offense at our Anaheim monthly show. They stole a collection from a collector that was valued more than $10,000 of Japanese occupation. So we were able to facilitate their being detained and the rescue of the collection. And the collection is going to be returned later today.
And they got all the name and address and everything.
Absolutely.
Good job. So, excellent.
Wow. That's awesome.
Oh, we don't get a fake clap for that?
No, that gets a real one.
Wow, so is there like a wall in the back somewhere of people's pictures that aren't allowed?
Wanted posters.
No, wanted
but we
posters.
Do know who they are. We have the names and addresses and things like that. Anyway, we do welcome people to come to our shows and have a lot of fun, search for stamps and hidden treasures, but we don't like you to help yourself to the point of taking them without paying for them. We frown on that. Anyway, on a good note, there are over 40 vendors here in 72 booths, including Regency Superior Auction, conducting a two-day auction, and you should be able to find just about anything of interest, whatever it may be, stamps, covers, sheets.
Check out stampshowsteve.com as well, because there are monthly stamp shows that you can come to besides just this one, even though this one is the biggest and the best.
It is actually in the top 10, and some dealers rated in about the middle, in the 4 to 6 position of largest and premier shows in the country. So it's the place to be in stamping this weekend.
I also, you know, I didn't notice it last time, but usually you have the tall walls in the back of the booths.
Yes.
And now you had the short ones. It really opens up the room a lot. It makes it easy.
Oh, you mean the lower curtain?
Yeah.
In the middle, it'll be the lower, except we have several FTC dealers, which is floor-to-ceiling dealers.
Yeah.
And they're like one-stop shop at all. Maybe you don't get to anybody else, but please try to make it to other dealers because you never know what you find, and they want to see you too. So
let me guess. A to Z is F to C.
FTC.
We'll have to remind him that his spelling's incorrect. A to D, F to C, A to Z, FTC, DMP, F to C, Stamp Art, F to C. Oh, he got it right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I invited Jim to come in and say hi on the podcast.
Mr. Dempsey. Probably too busy to get away, but I'm sure we'd welcome them.
Such is life.
Yeah. They want to be busy at their booth. They have approximately, I think, 18 chairs at their booth, usually full.
I noticed
the
one of them
the
was.
Show opens till the end of the show.
One of them was empty just a little while ago.
Oh, they were taking a break.
Yeah.
They had to get some food or something.
Yeah, he's got a good customer base there.
Yes. So have any of you guys found any treasures this weekend?
When? I have not even
haven't had
started
look.
Looking yet.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We've been pretty busy ourselves.
Seen
probably be Sunday before I get a chance to look.
Let's see.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of treasures. A guy brought a couple of really nice original gum 122s to us.
Oh. Yeah, you're on about that again.
Yeah, see, I told you, 122.
Original bubble gum.
Well, for him, I hope not.
No, just what it's 2:30 now. We started at 10.
It's 3
o'clock. 3 o'clock. So for 5 hours, we've been working instead of shopping.
Okay. Well, I found a lot of makeshift book of pains, which I was low or didn't have in stock, and I found about, oh, I don't know, 20 different ones. And so I was happy to get those for representation. You can find anything here at the show. If you can't find it, you either ran out of money or it doesn't exist.
Well, actually, that brings up a conversation I was having at the table where the social aspect of stamp collecting, there's different ways, obviously, to collect stamps. But when you hit a certain level, you go for the social aspect of it.
Absolutely.
And the social aspect of it is really the stamp clubs and the stamp shows and getting out and talking to other people as opposed to just staying home collecting stamps.
Almost hate to admit it that I'm 55 and I'm the youngest member of the Orange Seniors Stamp Club because you have to be 55 to join. However, 6 months out, I asked if I could join and several members complained, "Well, you're not old enough." And the president, who's a customer of mine, goes, but it's Steve. And he says, okay, let him in. Anyway, the following meeting or two, those two that complained came and thanked me for being there. Because of what I bring to the table as far as information, stamps. And I've sold a lot of stamps on the auction starting at 25 cents. Things that I cataloged up to a couple hundred dollars. And whatever they went for to create spice and excitement in the room. So it's now like, well, let's see what he brings in next.
I love little stamp auctions like that.
That's cool.
I go for the social aspect. And actually, the first meeting or two, there's a man named Roger that goes around with a little cup of stamps and glassines, and he hands to everyone, here, take one. And the first meeting or two, I don't want that. I don't need that. I'm a dealer. You're a dealer. Oh, no. And then I realized, wait a minute, it's not about that. It's a matter of, that's his enjoyment of sharing his stamps.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And here, happy stamps for the day. So maybe you get something you want. Maybe there's a cancellation. And actually, I found a few purple stamps for my purple stamp collection.
There you go.
Okay. I haven't found any bananas for my banana stamp collection yet, but I'm sure they'll come along because other people find them. But it's special, and I go there for the fun. I eagerly work up 10 lots for the auction and try to get them on the table in a position that there'll still be some money left over for my lots, and sometimes I didn't get there in time. But at the end of the meeting, there's a group of four or five of us, so we have our Wednesday breakfast. Okay, and we walk down to a place called the Filling Station, which is by Chapman College, and we have our special brunch and watch the eye candy walk down the street. It's very enjoyable between the camaraderie, the food, and the sights. So I look forward to it every Wednesday, being a senior citizen at the Senior Center and participating. And we never know what we see next. And again, the social aspect is why I go now, not because of money or, well, I'm here to do business. Yeah, I want to do business, but I go there because it's a lot of fun.
I'm a little curious. Speaking of social, I just got my invitation to the Young Philatelists meeting over in Riverside, and I was just curious, Scott, did you get yours as well?
I got one by email, I think, last week, and I responded that I'd definitely be there.
Yeah.
One of those two.
What about Jeff and Jessica? Are you APS members?
I got my notice.
Are you guys going to show up?
Stanley just walked in.
Yeah.
Wave him. Wave Stanley in.
Hello, Stanley.
Hello, Stanley.
Uh-oh.
Stanley. One of the premier stamp dealers in the country has just entered.
So how are you all?
We're all doing great. How's your show doing so far?
Okay.
And how are you doing with your mobility?
Surviving. Hopefully, next week, maybe I'll be done with the walker. I'll be able to start walking.
Good deal. For those of you who don't know, and I know we have a worldwide audience, Stanley is a predominant U.S. dealer. Well, why don't you plug your business?
Wouldn't that be prominent?
Prominent. I was thinking of a better word.
Actually,
than prominent.
I'm a jack of all trades. I do foreign, I do U.S., just as most people don't know me for the foreign.
Yeah.
But for years, you know, I had a store for over 30 years.
A great little store.
And I, you know, bought and sold foreign. I've handled some very interesting foreign stamps and postal history.
Yes, but what books have you written?
I've written a book on the U.S., the New York Postmaster's Provisional. Mm-hmm. And I've written many articles on U.S. stamps, mostly classic.
Yeah,
that's what I'm known for.
There you go.
But as all of us know, sitting here at the table, you're not anybody unless you've written an article for the Philatelic Book of Secrets.
Oh, yes.
Are you planning on writing a small little article for the next one?
We've talked about it. At some point, I'll get around to doing it. But I have written for other organizations.
And actually, he gave me some really good input last night on it.
On what to do for the next one.
The next Book of Secrets is going to be fantastic. It is. It's going to put the new... This one, it's not going to put it to shame, because I think we did a great job. But it is going to be a heavy-duty thing that people are going to love and keep forever. I mean, it's going to be a reference that everybody is going to want.
Well, that's the goal for every single issue of that Book of Secrets.
But you want to stick to a topic for each book.
And we've got a great topic for this one.
Rather than a whole bunch of topics which may appeal to different people, but if you have one book with one topic, it'll do more justice for the book than spreading it around with different topics.
So have you sold anything interesting today, or seen anything interesting, or bought anything interesting today?
No.
No.
I love honesty.
I haven't really seen anything. I haven't had a chance to walk around or hop around.
Join the club.
And I haven't looked for anything, really. I've sold, you know, some stamps, but no covers. I've had people look, and, you know, the first day of a show really doesn't do justice. I remember one Orco Expo. It was a show, one of the Mike Stern shows years ago. I didn't do any business on Friday. I didn't do any business on Saturday. The last 2 hours on Sunday, I did enough business to cover the entire show.
Yeah.
So you can't go by what you do, because people like to come by and look, and I've had some people look at some interesting things, and we'll see what happens. I don't base any judgment. It's like a bookie. A bookie doesn't pay on how the game is going. It pays at the end of a game. And that's to quote KG.
Oh, KG, yeah.
Great analogy.
Last night we were at dinner together. Thank you very much for paying. And we ran the gambit of the destruction of the stamp business to the booming of the stamp business.
You know, people talk about... what's the problem with the stamp world and everything? If people were to actually read the journals from over 100 years ago, the same problems we have today, they had in 1869. When the 1869 issue came out, all the journals were writing about, why are they printing these stamps? They're ugly. We don't like them. When the special printings came out and the reissues, people were wondering why the government was producing fakes. So there's really not, you know, there's an old saying, there's nothing new under the sun. In the stamp world, there really isn't anything new. The same problems that I hear today, I've heard 10 years ago, 20 years ago, even 40 and 50 years ago.
Well,
yes, things are different because, in general, computers are much more available, and the internet has changed things tremendously. However, when color photography came about, auction houses were changed immeasurably. When they allowed photographs in books and in catalogs, the world changed. So the world is always changing by new technologies, but it's still the same old thing. People are basically collecting what they want. Over 100 years ago, the thing was postal stationery. You look at old catalogs and how much postal stationery was listed, not only U.S., but worldwide. Today, you can't give away some of that stuff. So there are trends in any business. And there are trends in the stamp world. And what's trendy today, 10 or 20 years from now, might not even exist.
Yep.
Any other questions that you may want to ask me before I
just to kind of add on to that, I've been reading off and on. I pick up, read a couple chapters of Hearst's autobiography, and it's really interesting. He started in the Depression, and he wrote for many years about everything. And it's really interesting if you want to get a good mindset of what the business was like, how it's changed. You know, he had a long span. He really understood the business. His autobiography really just goes into a lot of things that just open your eyes up to the market. And it's like what you said, for anybody who's spent a significant amount of time in this business, you just realize that the business, people complain about it or say that the business is dying, shifting, doing whatever it's doing. You realize The business is still just as healthy as it was 100 years ago.
It's also a cyclical business.
Yes, that's true.
Because we have an international every 10 years, soon after the international prices rise and then they start falling. And then they start going back up again as we approach the next international. And I've seen that since 1956. I've seen it go up and down. In the late 60s, there were problems. In the early 70s, things started rising. And after Interfil in 1976, things started dropping. Although we had inflation, which really, but that was totally unrelated to the health of the stamp world.
But well, I remember that time period because it brought in a huge influx of investors.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of investors. And if you really want to read a journal that will give you an insight, read the Journal of American Philately.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the first 10 years of that, you will be amazed at what they are talking about in there. And even the way the catalog has changed. If you go back to the special printings and how they were listed in the catalog, a number of them were not even listed. And you might have to ask yourself, how come they didn't list them? But it's very interesting going back to the 1880s and 90s and just look at the Scott catalog and see what was listed and when other things started being listed. Enjoy yourselves.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. Our live studio audience,
also known as Cash's Peanut Gallery. We'd also like to welcome Wayne Youngblood of Woo-hoo! Regency Superior Auctions. Hello, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Doing fine. How are you?
Good. How's the...
Anything new and interesting? Last time you told us some pretty good stories. You got any new ones?
Well, I don't know about new stories.
So how's the auction going so far?
Well, of course, the auction itself won't begin until tomorrow, but there are a lot of people in there viewing right now. We've got large people digging through large collections and the singles and everything else going on in there.
We were asking before, if you had $1 million, what would you want to buy out of the sale? If you had $1 million, what would you want to buy out of the sale?
Well, common sense would dictate I'd be going after the really high-quality, more expensive things that would be a good financial investment in the future. But given my collector base is someone weaned on mixtures, you'd find me in there piling through all the large boxes and stamps flying everywhere. I love digging. Digging for buried treasure is the...
I think that's probably one thing that binds a lot of collectors together is just the treasure hunt part of being a stamp collector.
Oh, absolutely. Really, the thrill of the hunt is at the basis probably for most of our collecting instincts. Even on the higher end, it isn't necessarily that you're going to find something in the bottom of the cigar box that's worth $250,000, but if you have that kind of money to spend, just finding those items you know you want is a challenge, and when you do find it, you know, I don't remember if I told you this one or not. I don't think I did. But years ago, are any of you guys familiar with Joe Balo?
I'm not.
Okay, Joe Balo was the preeminent expert on perfins for many, many years back in the 60s and 70s. He wrote the big, thick volume on them and such. And I was at a stamp show with him in the mid-1970s or so. And this is a guy who, in his own specialty, had seen everything, done everything, knew everything, wrote the book and such. And we got separated on the show floor, and suddenly from clear across the show floor, I heard the loudest scream of, "I found it!" And he was just, you know, yelling, screaming, jumping up and down. The guy was in his 70s at the time already, but he was very, very animated about it. And what he'd found is something he never even knew existed, which was a perfined 5-cent Washington Franklin Rose Error on cover. And so, of course, the natural question after that is, Joe, did you start yelling before or after you paid for the stamp? He didn't answer that.
Enthusiasm costs you.
Exactly.
It can, yes.
There's nothing better as a collector than finding a really, really old, dusty banker's box.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's one of the things with the bidding. I mean, I've bought a lot of collections from people, and when I do that, I personally tend to way overpay because I know the personal story involved. I meet the people, get to know them, and it's real easy to overpay in that situation. But digging through auction lots or big lots or even the occasional abandoned collection somewhere, you can find some goodies still. One of my own personal favorites of many, many years before was for a time shortly after out of college, I was a director of a county historical society. And at that time, they had dug literally everything out of the courthouse there. And so they had all these courthouse covers from the 1870s, 1880s, and such. And although they belonged to the county, they had them all microfilmed. And at that point in time, they decided they no longer needed the hard copy. So they were disposing of all those. And I got to dig through all those boxes. And at the time, I wasn't particularly sophisticated yet. And so I did a few dumb things, such as there was a gorgeous courthouse cover, oversized courthouse cover that had been loaded with all kinds of things. Franking was a really nice pair of 25-cent parcel post stamps. And I didn't have that stamp yet, so I soaked them off. Then I looked at the catalog later. That was
Boy, Wayne, I sure do hate to hear your stories, because every time I do, I hear about something that you have destroyed that used to be an incredible amount of money.
Are you saying I'm the Tomine Tom of stamp collecting?
Oh, man. I cringe every time you're going to tell me about this great story of something you almost had.
Well, you know, I try to remember these things, and I keep, you know, like the pair of parcel post stamps I still have and everything. I keep these things not only as a guide of what not to do, but I tell the stories, too, because we've all done them. We've all done stupid things in the past, and hopefully by laughing at it, we help to prevent more of them happening in the future. But
damn it, they should make stamps out of something other than paper.
They do. Wood, steel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vinyl records.
Yeah.
Rock of Gibraltar.
Well, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you stopping in.
All righty.
Thank you very much.
Thank
good
you.
To hear from you again. Thank you.
We'll see you guys later.
Well, we're lucky to have Bob Chisholm, who is really nice and close to our offices. And he's remarkable because he actually has a stamp shop. And he's also here at Orco Expo. I've been going to his shop for, had to be 35 years.
We opened 39 years ago last October.
Oh, and I remember buying U.S. number 11s from you way back then when I was still in high school. So Not giving away my age or your age or anything, but it's been a long time.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering, you know, you're still in business as a brick-and-mortar stamp shop.
Right.
And
we're a dinosaur.
Yeah, kind of a dinosaur. So tell us some dinosaur stories.
Well, we use that in some of our advertising. If you're looking for an old dinosaur, come and see us.
Yeah.
I've had customers even say the only thing missing in the store is sawdust on the floor. if you're looking for a neat place, and there was a lady in the shop recently for something, and she says, I'm an organizer, and she looked behind where I was sitting and said, oh, my God, I says, there's no hope for you in here. a number of years ago, and we do a show in Denver in May every year, and we stopped in a shop, and my wife, who's my partner, we're in this together, she says, look how neat and organized this place is. I says, yeah. He's got six little binders of stamps, two boxes of first day covers, and a terafold of U.S. stamps, and that's his inventory. He should be organized. But on the other hand, it just, you know, with the store, and the scary part is we talked when we were 60 of closing the store when we were 70 and just going off and doing stamp shows like everybody else because we like to travel. And at 64, we looked at each other and went, oh, that's a scary thought. 70 when we were going to do this was 2 years ago, so obviously we've never done it, and there are no plans. And I have been in a stamp shop continually besides our own. I was started in 1964 and one in Los Angeles when there were lots of stamp shops.
Yep.
And lots of collectors. And yet we've had three new young people come in the shop recently in the last 2 months. One of them is a blast. First two times, Dad came and sat. Now Dad just sits in the car and turns him loose. He's all over. He's on his hands and knees going through cover boxes. And he doesn't like pretty pictures. He mostly collects older GB stamps. No Elizabeth, got to be George VI and older. The stuff that you and I, we got 10 of those for a nickel when we were a kid. He thinks they're the most wonderful thing they are. And so there's a lot of pleasure with the shop. So
that is a good point, because if you are a 10-year-old kid and you walk into this show, you're probably going to be lucky if you have $20 to spend.
Yeah, but at the same time, half the dealers are going to try and hand stuff to you too, because they want to encourage you to collect stamps.
Yeah, but Kaz, you remember the early days of eBay when before PayPal, we used to get letters. I would say quite often I would get letters from kids. They hand wrote their letters with their $6 or $7 purchase in
yes,
there.
Yeah.
I think the kids are just like everybody else who's under 50. They've switched over to the internet. It's it's just easier to use, and when they get advanced enough, then you start seeing them come to shows. But, you know, these are people who have been in the hobby for 5 or 10 years before they make it to their first shows nowadays.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is that doing it on the computer is cool.
Yeah.
Whereas going to a show, maybe not so cool, especially if you can't drive yet.
What's the purpose of a stamp? To mail a letter.
Yeah.
When our youngest son was in second grade, they wanted every parent who could come and talk about what they did for a living. And so Barbara and I went, and we took envelopes and a little package of stamps and some stamps for postage, and we helped all the kids address the envelopes to themselves, showed them how to put the stamps on the envelope, put the stamps inside, and mail them home to themselves. And they thought this was a kick. But they learned what a stamp is really all about. And, I'm old enough that when I was a kid, every kid was a stamp collector.
Yeah.
Sometimes only for 2 weeks, but everybody collected stamps.
Well, like I said earlier, I think a lot of the people who are, the 50 and younger crowd, I just don't think they make it to the shows, especially on Fridays. You got to take time off work.
Friday is a killer probably for anybody who's younger.
Yeah.
You're all stamp collectors. Do you want all the stamps now? Of course not. It's the chase. You never want the last one, ever. And
I don't know.
Again, we're a different generation. I'm a different generation.
I believe the collecting bug's alive and well. My oldest nephew, he just turned 7. And the one thing he wanted for his birthday was a massive amount of Pokemon cards. And I know Kaj's sons are the same way. They have books and books and books, 1,000 Pokemon cards. And it doesn't matter how many they have. They still want more because they collect the things. I think it's not a generational thing. It's just a little hard to see sometimes. But the collecting gene is still there.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Everybody asks if our kids are interested in this, and I say no.
Yeah.
We have one hope. Unfortunately, he's only 7 years old. Grandson and our daughter and son-in-law stole him and moved him up to Eugene, Oregon a few years ago. But he comes back, and they were down for Christmas. And he came in our office at home, and he talked to Grandma, and he said, "This is really intriguing." And our light bulb just went off. It's like, okay, hurry up and grow up, Ethan. This can all be yours.
At one point, I thought I was going to be the oldest stamp dealer in the world. This was before Alex and before a few other people started coming out.
You mean the youngest?
The only stamp dealer in the world. I should say that. I've seen quite a few people my age just start into the hobby once I hit my 30s. I started running into more and more people in their 30s. And it just became clear to me that it's not that in your 20s you're busy with so much other stuff. The reason why you just don't see these young dealers is because you're busy trying to go to college, get started with your career, blah, blah, blah. And
so are they.
Right. So, you know, it's only when you hit your 30s that you finally have free time. And what you were still probably collecting in your 20s. I've run into quite a few people who just bought a little bit on eBay, sold a few items on eBay, whatever they decided to do. And now they've been stamp collectors for 5-10 years. I meet them, they're 35, 40, and they have wonderful collections. And this is their first time since stamp shows. I'm very, very, very optimistic about the future.
I think it's an intelligent hobby.
Oh, yeah, I think you see people closer to genius IQs than normal IQs.
I think it also stimulates your mental activity as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I was listening to you talk about the brick and mortar store, and I have a son who's into photography, and he'll go to 3 or 4 photography stores, and he'll look at the cameras and he'll check out the lenses, and then he'll go home and he'll order what he wants off Amazon. That's just the way he shops.
Yeah,
and that's the way his generation shops.
You can get it for
my
less.
Only negative with the internet is this is a social hobby.
Exactly.
And who you talk to, let's say you find a stamp you've been looking for 5 years. Doesn't have to be an expensive stamp. Just elusive.
Well, I had
and
to
get excited when you find that. But if you find it on the internet, you can go whoopee at home, but nobody hears you. If you come into my shop or if you come to a show and you talk to a dealer or other collectors about this, they share in that excitement with you that, wow, I mean,
yeah.
You know, we all have whatever we collect. We all know that some things are very difficult to find. And you can collect U.S. number 11s, but there's always going to be one out there you've never, whoa. Never seen one like this baby before.
That's not exactly.
It might cost you $10 and you go, in my whole life, I never thought I'd see one like this. But, you know, and so you want to share that with nobody? No, you want to share it with everybody you know.
Yeah, I collect U.S. joint issues, and I was looking for an Italian stamp cataloged 40 cents. It took me 11 years to find that stamp.
Yeah.
Every time I saw the Dempsey's A&D stamps, I'd be asking them. All these floor-to-ceiling dealers, I'd be asking every single one of them, do you have one? And I wanted it mint never hinged. I found a number of them used, but I could never find a mint never hinged one. I found out it was a popular stamp in Italy, and a lot of them were used on letters.
Yeah.
And so, but it's only a 40-cent stamp, so most dealers don't carry them. You have to go to the big floor-to-ceiling dealers at a show. And I finally, after 11 years, the Dempseys came up with one, and he just gave it to me. It was a 40-cent stamp, but he shared in that moment when I got the stamp. It was the last joint issue that I needed at the time, and him and anybody else who was sitting there got to share in that little moment.
Right.
So I totally understand that point of view.
But you see the same thing on the internet too. Chat rooms or stamp chat rooms are full of people who they attach their scan of something they just won on eBay or bought from some other site.
Or found in a box.
Or found, yeah. And they are typing for joy about this wonderful stamp they have. And they're sharing it with people in real time. You know, there may be half a dozen people really excited that this guy found this one stamp he's been looking for a decade. It happens there, too. Just because it's virtual doesn't mean it's not a real feeling.
Well, I give away a stamp to every young collector who comes in the door for the first time. U.S. 651, George Rogers Clark. And when I was about 10 or 12 years old, I bought one of those on approval for 25 cents. This is 1952-4, somewhere in there. The stamp is still 25 cents. But I thought that was the most neat stamp I ever saw at the time. I thought, when I saw that, I said, if they make stamps like this, how can you not collect? Mm. And I shared my feeling about that with these young collectors when I give them that stamp. And then I tell them the rest of the story on that stamp. I said, look at all these other stamps issued in the same time period. They're all little stamps. This is a great big stamp. Why is that? Well, it turned out the Postmaster General of the time, when they issued that stamp, happened to be from Indiana. And they had never issued any stamp that had to do with anything or anybody from Indiana. And he says, we're going to make a statement. And he did. And I just think, I mean, it's one of my favorite stamps. It's worth 25 cents. So it doesn't have to be valuable to be a neat stamp. But I give one to all these young collectors, and then I tell the story. Because if it doesn't have a meaning to you, then what's the point? But nobody yet has told me they didn't think it was a neat stamp, and they thank me. So
I remember.
I haven't run out of them yet either, which means there aren't enough kids. But.
I remember buying my first album and in a brick-and-mortar shop, and the owner of the stamp shop gave me my choice, and I chose a C25A, the booklet pane of three, and he had a really, really, really nicely centered one, and he says, anytime we sell an album, we always like to put the first stamp in it for the collector, and so that's what he did. He gave me that item as a gift, and I still have it. It's still part of my collection to this day. So it really does mean something. You create a lot of interpersonal interaction there.
In the shop, we've only kept one thing for ourselves, and that was we bought a collection from a longtime customer. We spent several years buying it. We paid him over $85,000 for everything. And he was moving from Laguna Beach up near San Luis Obispo, and he came in with a box of stuff he was going to throw out. And he said, I decided I'd let you throw this all away. Well, it was old catalogs and mostly stuff worth nothing, except there was one thing in there, and there was a Minkus New Worldwide stamp album, 1957 edition, still had the paper wrapper on it, no stamps in it. So obviously they bought it for one of their kids, hoping they'd get a stamp collector in the family. It didn't work. In 1957, for my 15th birthday, that's the same stamp album I begged and pleaded my mother for my birthday, because I'd outgrown my little paperback album. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to keep this. It's not worth anything to anybody. It's too out of date. And when I retire someday, I'm going to fill it with used stamps, hinge them all in, and I'm going to cheat where there's a picture of a $40 stamp. Something for 10 or 20 cents will work just fine. Who'll know? And when I go, they can put it in the box with me. And when they come to the funeral, they can say, look at him. He thinks he's taking his stamps with him. Ha, ha, ha. Well, I've still got the album. It's still empty. And the problem is, since we're practically the last brick-and-mortar store, if we retire, I'm not going to have any place to go to buy all those 10-cent stamps to fill up my album.
So that idea apparently has just gone out the window, but it was a good idea at the time.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
You're
that was
welcome.
Great.
My pleasure.
Okay, you can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com. Our website, stampshowheretoday.com. Our Twitter is stampshowht. Facebook, stampshowheretoday. And our website, we have a new call-in number. It's an answering machine. No one will answer it, where you can leave your questions and comments. The number is 949-873-4298. And that's a Google voicemail. So, on that note, keep collecting. This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
Hi, this is Tom Mills, H.R. Harmer Stamp Auctions. You're listening to the podcast for Stamp Show Here Today.